heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, Rob Sirra was just 21 years old, and he was just starting his new job as a New York City firefighter when terrorists brought down the World Trade Center's Twin Towers September 11th, 2001. Certainly a date that will live in infamy. Well, the thing with Rob, he, new guy, new day on the job, firefighter, New York City, the whole bit, but he wasn't even on duty yet. And like a lot of people, he spotted those burning skyscrapers from one of the bridges. He called his firefighter brother for guidance. And then he got on a bus and got as close as possible, got on the air and wanted to help. He says, "I had no idea what I was doing. I had never been to a fire before." This was, again, a new guy's just starting out here, right? But he joined the crowds. He wanted to help. And he joined in first responders going through the chunks of building material and breathing in the pulverized dust. Was loaded with cement, asbestos, lead, glass fibers, dioxins, and all kinds of chemicals. And nobody really knew what was in there. We just knew that everybody had like a white paste on their face. In fact, he actually said that, that everybody was covered in this white paste. And you remember those visuals. You've seen them on the television, clearly. And now all these years later, friends, and thousands of people are still feeling the impacts of what happened in Lower Manhattan. Well, Sirra goes on to say, "I do remember thinking that this is probably going to kill me." So he said that to himself as he was doing that, but he kept on doing it. And you begin to ask yourself why. We'll answer that today. And he says, you figure two buildings full of glass, asbestos, steel, you could taste it in your mouths, he says. "I hope I have a lot of years left, but common sense and reason tell me I may not." Wow. Well, friends, several years on, first responders began falling sick. A lot of people were falling sick. As of 2007, there were around 7 out of 10 had faced respiratory issues, it was documented, from contamination from ground zero. And a lot of these cases of all kinds of cancer would begin to impact people years later as this got through their systems. Now, in total there, we're talking about 343 firefighters and paramedics were among the about 2,800 people who died in the fires of those two buildings now, okay, on September 11th. More than 150 have died since, according to the medical office of the New York Fire Department there. This was the purest form of patriotism and the highest order of humanity that you could possibly ask for. When you think about why people would go to such heights, why they would, you know, get involved in something like this, because people were in need, clearly. And you could see that. You could see that smoke billowing up into the sky in New York. I mean, we all remember. In fact, we all remember where we were that day. It's just something that's built into you. About everybody you talk to today remembers where they were on 9/11 at that moment. It was a moment that stood still. It was a moment the country will never forget. Certainly this generation will never forget. Now, where it goes from there is up to the generations that follow, isn't it now? Now, there were a lot of things that happened with those buildings and when those airliners struck the buildings. And interestingly, there was conversation about them being fitted for respirators at the time. There was a lot of conversation about why people weren't fitted properly with these respirators and masks and various equipment. And it got a little controversial. Christine Todd Whitman, who was, at that point, she was the Environmental Protection Agency administrator. And she, it was documented, erroneously assured people that the air was safe to breathe. So they never received the mask and equipment. Now, since that point, Christine Todd Whitman came out and said she regrets having said that. She regrets having made that decision. She regrets having put that out there, people. In 2006, the EPA chemist Kate Jenkins claimed the agency knew about the toxicity in the air at Ground Zero, claiming that the particles in the dust were as caustic and alkaline as Drano. Wow. And there was conversation about the mayor as well, Rudy Giuliani, that he could face political consequences at the time because of the cleanup, but it was that toxic air. But the bigger story here is the emergency workers, the first responders, the patriots, the people who wanted to help. They wanted to help what had happened there. They wanted to make right what was wrong. And there's something so majestic about that, people. There's something so American about that. I still get goosebumps today at this moment when this story comes up, I have to tell you, because it's a sense of pride. It's a sense of patriotism. I can't explain it to you other than right at this moment, I've got goosebumps talking to you right now, right here. It's just a form of being an American and what that day meant to all of us. We know what that day meant. It was a rude awakening for all Americans to pay attention and understand what the fight is ahead. But the story today, friends, I want to deliver to you is one really of the power of humanity. It's really the silver lining in all of this. It's the impact and the force of people. I'm always amazed by the American might and American exceptionalism, and the spirit of America is by far like nothing you've seen on this planet. It's amazing to me. It's that can-do, will-do attitude that Americans have. And that's when people want to jump in and they want to do the right thing. And I think that's where people don't focus on that today. The media certainly doesn't focus on that today. But there's a lot of good in humanity. Just nobody's talking about it. I like to talk about the good of humanity. I like to bring that out. I like to remind people about that lining, about the majesty of America. There are some really good people out there. In fact, the vast majority of them are. I think we should be focusing on more of that. I think our children should know more of that. I think we all should understand that's the spirit of America. That's where this country shines, from sea to shine and sea. And we forget that yet. And we mostly forget that because we're following the political class and their power, street, and greed, and corruption to pull each other down. And in respect of that, they pull all of us down. And so I want to ask you to lift yourself up and lift your friends out and people up to get out from under that cloud. There was a victim compensation fund put together for September 11th. It was established in 2011. It was to help first responders whose illnesses and deaths were connected to the exposure to toxic substances that they encountered at the World Trade Center and at the Pentagon and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. But the problem is, people, that fund is nearly depleted, and Congress has had to act more than once. The $7.3 billion fund had already paid out about $5 billion to 21,000 claimants, but it still had about 19,000 additional unpaid claims to address, is the latest information we see here. And, of course, they came out and said their resources are rapidly dwindling. And the fund, they say that they'll probably only be able to pay about 50% of the prior value, and claims received after February 1st will be paid at 30%. So this thing is falling fast. They don't have the money, in other words, to pay out for all of this. So Congress was supposed to act, and they've been dragging their feet like they tend to do often, sadly. And of course, you all out there know I'm a big fan of Congress. Just love them up there. They're doing such a swell job for all of us now, aren't they? I can continue to encourage you to be careful when you get to the voting booth, and you be careful who you're pulling the lever for, please. And that's on all of them. I'm talking about Democrats, Republicans, independents, and the socialists as well, you know. So in comes John Stewart. Now, John Stewart, John, you know John. He's the comedian and the provocateur of the political class. He's funny, funny as hell. Of course, he goes after more of the right. We know his political slant, but that's beside the point. That's not what this is about today. In fact, after what I've seen of the last few days, I may be John Stewart's biggest fan now. Well, he says, you should be ashamed of yourselves. He calls out Congress. You should be ashamed of yourselves. And he calls them out. Now, there was a speech urging Congress to reauthorize the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund we just talked about. And he had a very passionate plea out there. You've seen the video potentially. This was the same John Stewart, by the way, that ran The Daily Show. And he was pretty commonly slamming government. And he's been doing that. But he's been a big supporter of first responders, been a first big supporter of 9/11 and all of this. And because John's an American. I mean, he's a patriot, really. And that's no longer hidden anymore. I mean, maybe that's hidden with a lot of people that you see in the public purview. And a lot of folks in Hollywood, they hide that. But John, that's not hidden anymore with John. He's a patriot, clearly. And he says, these are his words, as I sit here today, I can't help but think what an incredible metaphor this room is for the entire process that getting health care and benefits for 9/11 first responders has come to. This was where he was addressing really an empty Congress. The room was about half filled as he was talking to them. Behind me, a filled room of 9/11 first responders, and in front of me, a nearly empty Congress. Now, John took it very personally, and he got very choked up in that emotion, and I understand that. I understand what that means, back to that feeling of patriotism and how you feel when these things come up with a fellow human being and a fellow American. We know what that feeling is. You could see John being ridden to tears. And you could see this was real. This was authentic. This was John. This was him. This wasn't put on. There was no acting going on here. You could see that. It was real. You can't make that stuff up, people. You can't hide authenticity. And you can feel the passion of John as he's talking to Congress. I think he's both insulted and probably embarrassed. I'm embarrassed myself, the fact that we have a bunch of dumb politicians in Congress. You know, I'm embarrassed, insulted, the whole bit here. But I think at this point, I think the thing I would say is, let's just write a blank check. Let's just give a blank check to the 9/11 people. Let's make this right, people. I mean, that's what it should be about. We said never forget. What the hell did that mean, never forget? That's some kind of a quick mantra, some sort of a tagline on an advertising campaign. You know, maybe that's what they thought that was. But maybe we need to explain to them what never forget means. Never forget, people, means that you never forget. You hold these people in the highest esteem. You go to the ends of the earth and you help these folks out because this was the purest form of patriotism and the highest order of humanity. And people that went into that ground zero, that disaster, that cancer-ridden, smoke-filled pothole of a disaster in New York, in Lower Manhattan. I mean, that's a hell of a sacrifice. And people were sacrificing because they wanted to make it right. And the thing that surprised me more than anything, it wasn't just the people that were on duty, but it was the people that were off duty. And it were the people who wanted to help, they wanted to serve, they wanted to make it right. And there were people like the gentleman you'll meet today, a retired New York Fire Department Lieutenant Mike Bishop, you'll meet, who was also one of those guys. He wasn't on duty at all. In fact, he was retired. But these are the kinds of people who stood up, who went there to help out because they also had those goosebumps, you see, that I talked about, you know, that patriotism, that feeling that you just know you have to do something. It's a feeling you get here in this country as an American. It's a beautiful thing. If we could get back to that, you know, here's what I wish more than anything. And I just wish you take this from this program today and carry it with you in your life. But I see that America and Americans come together in the face of disaster often. I think there's nothing that will stop them. We've seen that throughout our history when we've come together in war, we come together at 9/11, but very seldom does the country come together otherwise. And I'm talking about really a lot of this falls after the political class and the political elite. It very seldom happens that way. But imagine the power if we could come together as Americans in peacetime, when things are right, when things are now. Imagine if we could have that same power, the can-do attitude of America, that feeling of sense of patriotism and pride of what it is in this country. Imagine the power of what that would be. That's exciting. If we could just figure that out and make that our rallying call out there, I'll tell you, the power of that would be absolutely incredible from sea to shining sea. That's what I hope for America. That's my vision and my hope for this country and for all of you out there. That's the lesson from today, people, is to pull out the best of humanity. I want to bring on a fellow now, a retired New York Fire Department Lieutenant Mike Bishop. He has an interesting story behind Mike and what he did at 9/11, and it fits exactly what we're talking about today.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com. where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm going to ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
I'd like you to meet Mike Bishop. He's retired from New York Fire Department as a lieutenant. He was a volunteer worker at Ground Zero. Now, very interesting, I want to tell you a little bit of backdrop about Mike. He became a New York City firefighter in 1979. Now, this is a family of firefighters. He followed in his father's footsteps. His dad, in fact, Homer Bishop, became chief of the department in 1990. He was the highest rank below the commissioner. Wow. Yeah. He was promoted to lieutenant, Mike was, in 1990, and enjoyed the next 10 years as a supervisor and teacher. He retired in December 1999. Now, you hear the dates, people. He retired in December 1999. Mike, I bet you never thought that when you retired in December 1999, that you'd find yourself back in some sort of action or duty, but at 9/11. But let's go right back to that day, please, of 9/11 and what had happened, because that's powerful and your story is powerful. I want to take it right there first. What happened on that day?
Earlier in the morning, my brother, who lives in Long Island, had called me. I was living in Staten Island at the time, and I wasn't watching TV. He said, "Are you watching TV right now?" I said, "No." And I turned the TV on, and I saw a quick news flash of what was happening. And I basically just hung up the phone, grabbed my gear, which I still had, and went over to Rescue 5 in Staten Island. I signed in the journal, let them know I was going over, so they had an accountability of where my whereabouts were. And I took the one of the first ferries over towards the island.
Mike, what time of day approximately was that?
It was, I'd say, a little bit after the second tower went down. Not sure exactly of the time, 11.
Okay.
The experience, basically, I had worked down in Lower Manhattan. In fact, I had worked in 15, which was the company at the site, the firehouse at the site. I had done an overtime tour there, so I was familiar with the area. We had done inspections. And those buildings, I know for a fact, just going inside, were humongous. They were you're talking something that was towering over everything in Manhattan and was, at that time, the greatest thing that was ever built. And to walk off the ferry and see a pile of dust that you're walking through and then get up to where the towers are, I explained to people like the end of actually Planet of the Apes, where Charlton Heston's on his horse and he looks up and he sees what's left of the Statue of Liberty. And I said, that's exactly what went through my mind. What happened here? You know, what did humanity do?
Yeah, it's a profound sight, Mike. I can just feel that at this moment here, and that sight that you're speaking about right there. I mean, I so get it. And so now you're, and I've been in those buildings, by the way. I was in the Windows restaurant at one time as well. You know, the restaurant at the top of one of the towers, yeah. And I was in several floors there in different places or what have you over time, you know. I had a relative at one point that worked in one of the floors there, as I recall. So I remember, as you described, you're right, the buildings were just unbelievably massive. I mean, they were towering. They were like nothing. Looking down from the top of that building is a sight like, you know, you would only know if you've experienced it, right, Mike?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's heavy. And so now these buildings are turned to just rubbish. I mean, they're all over the place. So as you see that now and you see the people, because you're there pretty early on, it's midday, both towers are down. The country is dumbfounded at that point. I mean, nobody really knows. We know kind of what happened, but we really don't know much more than that. You remember everything was stopped. The air traffic was stopped. Remember President Bush had stopped it all, right? You know,
yes.
And the country was at a standstill at that point, Mike. I mean, everything was at a standstill. In fact, even around the world, it kind of radiated out from there. So what's the first thing you do now is you see this here, you know, I see what goes through your mind, but what happens? I mean, where do you go? How do you start? Where do you do? I mean,
after walking, I think it was, I walked down, I think it was Wall Street, and then worked my way towards the site.
People are running the other way, right? While you're walking that way, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was part of the job, no matter what. The people were definitely going out of the buildings as we were going in. In fact, my dad used to mention that the most. He said, As far as crazy heroes go, we're doing the exact opposite of what your human nature would tell you to do.
Mike, stop there a minute. Tell me why we do that. Why do you do that? Why did your dad do that? Why is that? Tell me why.
I guess just having the hero aspect of having that type of job and seeing my dad. My father used to come home with, you know, the smoke, and you could smell it, and you get black stuff around his nose. And back then, they never had any mask protection or anything like that. These guys were like iron steel men. They went into the buildings, they inhaled this stuff, they did their job, they came out, and it affected them eventually. You know, my dad at 57, he ended up getting leukemia, he passed away.
And how old was he when he passed away, Mike?
57 years old.
Oh, wow, Mike, wow. And that's the form of the cancer, was this a byproduct of his work, you think, or?
I would say so. He was at some of the major fires in Manhattan and in Brooklyn, where there were many, many carcinogens in the smoke that they were inhaling.
Wow. I mean, 57 is incredibly a young man. May I ask today, how old are you now, Mike?
I'm 65.
There you go. So you've already surpassed Dad, yeah?
Yeah. Well, working out had a lot to do with it, and that was one of the big things about the firehouse, was that most of them had gyms, and you kept in shape because you had to for the job.
You had to for the job, yeah. And your brother was also in the business? He was also?
No, my brother was actually working for the telephone company. And he was down at the site also, and he has effects of the powder that we inhaled.
Right. About everybody does. Workers down there, people in the area, because that thing was so unsettling. It kept burning, by the way, for about 100 days. Is that right?
I remember one of the reports earlier on, they mentioned that 10% of the compounds that they had in the air, they couldn't even figure out what they were.
That's it.
It was the compression, the fire, and just the amount of material that was in everything. And I guess it changed a lot of the molecular structure.
Right.
They didn't know what we were inhaling at that point.
Right. Now, we're talking, this is the biggest loss of first responders we've ever had. I mean, this was massive. And you remember the numbers combined with firefighters and police and first responders and paramedics. As you say, many of them went into the buildings. So what do you do in this case where the buildings are down and people, I mean, it's a mess. It's a hot mess at this point. So how do you help out? What do you do in that? Because that's early on. And then take us forward from there. But that day, there's not much you could do, was there, except support or try to help people? Or because the buildings were already down by the time you got there, right?
Well, at that point, it was a rescue mission. And it was a matter of moving a tremendous amount of material earlier on by hand. And then when they finally got some of the rigs in there, and the cranes to move some of the pieces, we got more access to the site interior. And it would be basically, you would stop, you would tap, you would listen.
Right.
And they also, which I thought was unbelievable, the dogs that they had there, the search and rescue dogs.
Yeah.
They did an unbelievable job. And then towards the nighttime, I was talking to, it wasn't on military guys, he had a dog there. Mm-hmm. He was telling, he was telling the dog, go find a baby. And now I'm thinking, where do I have to go? Is there a baby or something? He says, no, that's how they train them. They make them find a doll.
Yeah. You know, I remember that. You just brought that vivid memory back to me. I remember that with the dogs. And I remember praying that they would find more people alive. In fact, I remember there was speculation of how many had died because nobody really knew at that point, Mike. You know, it was total speculation. But I remember praying that hopefully there would be an area where there would be some alive or something would have happened. And of course, that's almost impossible. There were a few, but very limited because the weight of those buildings came down. And as we know, the scenes, Mike, people were jumping from the buildings. And I just never could get my arms around that either to really understand, you know, get your head around that. But, you know, that's what you're faced with. I mean, people, you got to remember, you know, people forget that day, Mike, but you can never forget, as you say, never forget. I mean, people were making last calls and family members, and because they were on those high floors and they knew that they couldn't get down. I mean, it was an unbelievable moment of time. And I just remember the play-by-play and where I was and what was happening. I remember thinking, Mike, that why can't we get more helicopters out there and get those people off the roof? So you're there now. You're trying to, you see, there's a lot of people down there. You have the population that, and moving away from it, the cloud, the dust was all over Manhattan. It went on for miles, right, Mike?
Yes,
miles. It was a mess.
Uptown Manhattan, it was like it was right there. So
it was right there, and like you said, it was a scene from, like you say, almost like a Planet of the Apes scene. Something had happened, or a bomb went off, or something that totally leveled everything. Now, from that standpoint, that first day, how long did everybody stay out there and what happened from there? Because you stayed and you worked down in that area, didn't you, for a while? You volunteered, did you, for a bit?
From the time I stepped off the ferry and got there, and actually I was directing an entire line. It was almost like a passing the bucket kind of line, but it was just taking pieces, no matter how big they were, and they were passing them and building a pile out of the way so we could actually get in there and do some more searching. And I was there from that time until 2 a.m.
Two in the morning. And this was because you were trying to find people alive.
Yeah. At that point, we had no idea what was involved, who could have been buried, who could have been still alive. And it was a search and rescue mission at that point. And then later on, I went to just a recovery for the families to give them some peace of mind and closure.
You knew in your heart and you knew in your mind this was a moment for America. I mean, you knew being down there that this would be a landmark moment for the nation, huh, Mike?
Oh, yeah. This was like, it was surreal to put it that way. It was surreal being there and realizing that this was an attack on America. And you are part of it now. You're an integral part of it because you're part of the rescue and search team.
Yeah. I get the word surreal. That describes it real well for me because I can see what you mean. And it's still surreal in a lot of ways. Like, did that happen? Of course it happened. How long did you end up stay involved in that as a volunteer down there?
Well, I was there until Saturday of the first week. After that, they were turning away the guys who were retired, I guess due to liability and whatnot. And then it was basically all hands of guys that were active and on duty. And they were just calling in companies each day to work there for like months on end.
Right. Then it became, then they tried to get more order to it, right? And try to, you know, figure it out, I guess. There was a lot to do there, obviously. There was a lot of unknowns. We'd never been through anything like that before, right?
You talk about unknowns. I was on a steel beam climbing up and tapping and listening. And it was a pile of debris. And the next, I say, 2 days later, I went back to the scene. And I realized that where I was six stories up. Because they had cleared away the debris, and everything that was below that steel beam was air. So you're talking about perspective-wise. I'm thinking I was six stories up on a steel beam teetering and tapping, and below me there was debris. If I had fallen, I'd be okay. But the next day, it was gone. You were six stories up.
Wow. What's happened to you now since then? Bring us forward now from that date of what's happened to you, and how, and have you had impact from this?
Oh, most definitely. I'd say within 6 years or 5 years after the effect, say 2005, 2006, my blood pressure was erratic. I mean, I work out 3 days a week. I'm in really good shape. I don't take any medications or anything. And my blood pressure was going up and down erratically for like two weeks straight. I mean, high, really high, and then really low. They couldn't figure it out. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I started having pains in my feet and my legs, like nerve impulses. The pain was so bad in the toes that I couldn't sleep. You're talking days on end. I had an MRI done, and they told me I had mild to moderate damage in my legs, in the nerves. And then just recently, as of 2 months ago, I was diagnosed with possible prostate cancer. I had an MRI done. What they call with contrast, and they did find something there, and the doctor did find something on the exam. So now I'm due for a biopsy on the 28th of this month to see exactly what's going on. So hopefully it's just limited to the prostate and they can get rid of it.
So this is, they've catching that early on then, Mike, yeah?
Oh, yeah, and I've spoken to the FDNY doctors, and a lot of guys are getting, it's one of the major cancers that guys are getting. From the results of inhaling the stuff.
Right. How many years did you work on the fire department before you retired?
I did 20 years. I did my 20, and I started a business, started inventing training tools for fire and police and military. And it got to be too much, so I decided to retire, and I still had a connection with the job because of what my business was.
Yeah. Are you still doing that business today?
Yes, I am. I'm still
doing it. Wow. How many years? When did you start that?
1998.
No kidding. Wow. Congratulations on that, buddy. Yeah. And I see a name here. Is it called Power Jam? Is it?
Yeah. Power Jam. P-O-W-E-R-J-A-M-B. It's tools to teach guys how to force doors to get in quicker, to save lives quicker. Teach police how to use a battering ram and force a door. And it's all stuff that uses non-consumables. So you don't have to cut pieces of wood and put them in the door to make believe you're breaking a door or anything. It's all steel construction in it. Give the same effect as forcing a door that I experienced in Lower Manhattan.
Hmm. Wow, buddy, that is amazing. And this is all equipment for the industry, for the.
Yes. Yeah. I've even sold to. I have a window you can break and put back together to simulate ventilation training, and Fort Leonardwood had actually put it in their urban assault course.
Hmm.
Teach guys to go up a ladder, knock all the glass out, go in. And when you're done, you just snap it back together.
Yeah. Well, that sounds exciting, the whole product line. I'm interested in knowing more about that later, but I find that very interested in that. And so you've made a whole business out of that. And now do you deliver those products all over the country? Or?
Yeah, I've sold to Canada, all across the United States. I've even sold to Australia.
Okay. All right. And that's very, very cool. Power Jam LLC. Very good. And you know, the other interesting thing, I received a picture and a photograph from a producer of you, and they said that was you with the flag, that famous picture. Tell me about that picture. Describe that to me. What was going on there, please? And explain to listeners that picture.
Okay. Well, this was actually Saturday of the week of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And most of the debris was out of the way, and all that was left was basically 15 feet down and then more debris. The two holes were there where the footprints of the two towers. And I had walked out again on a steel beam, and I was directing guys for search. And what they were doing was they had orange paint cans, and if they found anything that looked like remains or something that was significant, mm-hmm. they would spray the orange paint, and this way you would know that was something they were interested in. And as I was walking up to that point, I saw a plastic flag on the ground. And I said, you know what? Now let's show everybody. I found a straw. I stuck the flag, put it in my back of my helmet. And as I was standing there, now you got to remember how many guys are working there by Saturday. Hundreds and hundreds of firefighters. Here I am, a retired guy. And that was taken by the New York City Fire Department photo unit of me standing there looking down at the two holes and watching the guys search.
I'll tell you what, that's an incredible photo. I'm looking at it right now, buddy. What do you think when you see that photo?
Well, originally it was on their website and underneath it said, God bless America. I said, you know what? That's perfect. That was the perfect thing I would want to tell everybody. This is my guys, my fire department. We're there and we're doing what we got to do to do closure for the families at that point.
Wow. The photograph is truly, truly amazing. And the fact that they took it with you and you're looking right out at the debris and the flag is there and the fire helmet is truly, truly a moment. And what it does is it's one of those photographs that freeze the moment in time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what it does. But that photo was used a lot out there. I remember seeing the photo when it was sent to me, huh?
Yeah, it was on their website for a while, and then actually they ended up making what they called a memorial patch, which kind of spooked me in a way because they used the silhouette of, or the part of my face and the helmet, and mm-hmm. they put a backdrop that was made digitally, mm-hmm. and they had like ghosts of firefighters walking through the debris. Same idea with a little bit more contrast and a little bit more of the original sight or look of the buildings when they were first knocked down.
Right. All right. So, Mike, let me dial back. Two thoughts I want to share with you here a moment here. One is, what do you think of Jon Stewart with the speech he made to Congress, to a half a audience here?
Yeah. I was floored. The guy was unbelievable, and every point he made was right on. And when he had mentioned about the few people that were missing, I even said to my wife, I said, those are the guys that are going to be looking for a job, because the guys that are in the union, fire department, police, emergency workers, mm-hmm. so forth, these are the guys that are looking at this TV show right now, and they're seeing that your people that you voted for don't even show up. And it's all about you guys and the compensation you deserve from doing what you did.
Yeah. I mean, if you weren't a fan, if somebody wasn't a fan of Jon Stewart before that, they certainly have to be afterward, I think, you know. I mean, right? Do you agree with that?
Oh, I used to watch The Daily Show all the time. I loved it. The political comedy is awesome.
Yeah, he was funny as hell, I know. The health-wise now, any concern? I mean, it looks like this thing, finally the committee did what they were supposed to do. Again, I suggest they put a blank check up there. But in any event, the way these people waste money, it shouldn't even be a question. Mm-hmm. Now it has to go to get a whole vote of Congress. We got to get a full vote and go through. You see any problems with that?
I have no doubt. I think the publicity should do the trick.
Exactly. Even you're saying to me, even Congress can figure it out. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely. flip a coin if they got it, but it better get them up heads for the guy.
I like it, Mike. I like it. Even Congress can figure that out, huh, buddy? So that should help with whatever, I hope, with whatever medical needs you have. Those will be hopefully handled through this, correct?
Yeah, well, I go down once a year for my 9/11 medical. Up to this point, everything has been fine. And the same guys that I work with, I see them, and you know, young, healthy guys that now, at my age, mm-hmm. they're on oxygen or they have skin cancer, they're talking, any kind of cardiopulmonary problems, any kind of cancer whatsoever throughout the body, you know. I had mentioned to the doctor about the leg damage, the nerve damage, and he said to me, well, not enough guys have it yet. And I was like dumbfounded. Well, I have to wait till enough guys get this thing to be certified for a particular thing that was a direct result of me being down there, you know.
None of it ever makes sense to me, Mike, you know.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
I mean, big question. What lessons have we as Americans, what have we learned from 9/11 and since 9/11?
Wariness. Wariness and think before we act.
Think before we act. Do you think we've learned that?
I'm hoping so, because if you act too quickly and rash, you end up with repercussions like 9/11 or like you say, what's going on in the country. with a lot of the shootings. You know, it brings up bad feelings, and a lot of people don't understand, and they take the wrong action to relieve the problem or solve the problem.
Yeah. Mike, I am wishing, and more than that, praying for you and your family, and more than anything, the most important thing is for your health, buddy, your health. Because without our health, I've discovered we have nothing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I tell people that all the time. You can have all the money in the world, and it doesn't mean a thing because you'd give it all up if you had a pain.
Yeah, it's all about our health, and it's about the ability to feel good. And as you say, and I can tell you're a health-minded person, when you say I'm working out, this or that, it really is about lifestyle, isn't it, Mike? You know,
you'll get out of it what you put into it. If you sit around on the couch watching TV, you're going to have problems.
I love your style. I love your laid back. I'd love to stay in touch with you and do this. Listen, I want to take a moment to celebrate and salute you, Mike, and your dad as well. Your dad, Homer Bishop, for sure, who became chief of the department in 1990. I just want to just put out a positive thought of energy into the world, buddy. Okay. You know,
it sounds like a good plan. My dad was one of the old timers, and actually, when he passed away, my mother handed me a box, and it had all his medals in it. He never wore them, never put them on his uniform. He basically said, "We don't need no stinking badges. That's what we do."
Yeah. Listen, help me, friends, in honoring all of these just heroes. I don't really have the words for it, but you hear Mike Bishop, and you hear his. His patriotism, his passion to serve, his passion to do good, because again, at the end of the day, people, as I've said here, this was the purest form of patriotism and the highest order of humanity. And Mike Bishop heard that call, and he delivered. He served. He delivered. And we salute that.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
And now, friends, on to our panel of voices, please. And I would like to welcome on here two awesome, awesome women here. First is Dr. Joni Johnston. She's a licensed clinical forensic psychologist and licensed private investigator. She is Dr. Joni's a weekly columnist on America Out Loud and a new voice here, and truly excited to have her background and her just ability to take a look at these things and try to make some common sense out of it. Excited to have her with us. Also excited for Kat the Hammer is here. And what's cool about Kat is she is retired law enforcement after 20 years. So she is a passionate LEO herself. And interestingly, Kat's very politically minded. Now, like a lot of people, she became very interested in the political field after the election of Trump. A lot of people did. They entered the arena for good or for bad and got engaged. And she became quite a force out there in the social media world. And there are many like that who became very, very passionate. And kind of, and I love passion. I love Kat, Joni. I love what I love about America is our diverse opinions. And our it's funny because what I love about our country is what other people seem to tear it down for, is the fact that we're all unique and different. And the fact that we think differently, I think, is the plus and the beauty of the country. And of course, it's what most people use as a divided mechanism today, sadly. Kat, I want to ask you, as a retired law enforcement officer, think about this a moment. I asked Mike at the end there, and what lessons have we as Americans learned from 9/11? How would you answer that, please?
And he's absolutely right. That's a tough question. You know, I would hope that we would, I hoped after 9/11 specifically that as a nation, we could see what we could be. I don't know, and not to sound corny, but the way everybody came together, the way people flew that flag, our flag, proudly, they had it on their cars, on their homes, on shirts. It's kind of, it's disheartening a little bit to see people have gotten away from that again, that there's a side of the aisle, so to speak, that doesn't think the flag is a good thing.
All right. So, Dr. Joni, I want to ask you the same thing. I know it's a hard question to ask, which is why I asked it. What lessons do you think we've learned as Americans from 9/11?
I think one of the first things that pops to my mind, Malcolm, is that we have lost our sense of invincibility, which I think a lot of us had before that. I think it's also true that that sense of vulnerability and the need to come together and protect each other and help each other has certainly faded over time. I think, ironically, another lesson that we've learned that Mike was really talking about is how memories fade and how important it is to not let them fade. And how I think, as a psychologist, I think it's human nature in a way that when there is a trauma, there's a tragedy, we all do rally around each other and we all, it brings out the best of us in a lot of respects. And yet over time, I think there's a certain sense of, okay, let's get past this. Let's get back to our normal life. And for people like Mike, who are in the middle of it, they can't get back to a normal life. This is a new normal life for them. And I think if we could learn to take the best part of tragedies that rally us and continue those, we would solve a lot of problems.
The way we come together in times of need, that if we could just do that in times of peace and in times where there's not a national crisis, you know, or some major catastrophe that's happened, whether it's a Pearl Harbor event or 9/11 event or something that's dramatically taken place here, we would be empowered as a nation beyond anything you've ever seen in your life. We don't seem to be doing that. We talk a lot about the Republic right now and where we stand. And then we see what Congress is doing here with the 9/11 fund. I guess I want to ask you, don't you think that these people, these first responders, don't we have an obligation? When I say a blank check, do you understand what that means? Dr. Joni, you answer that first. Do you see what I mean by a blank check? Don't you think we have a right and an obligation to do that no matter what?
100%.
Yeah.
It's just kind of hard for me to even get my arms around an argument against that.
Yeah, me as well. Kat, why is it that they play games with everything? And when I say games, Kat, I'm not even sure they did it. As I listened, I watched this video twice and I seen the hearings and then I read a lot of the backup and I thought about it, Kat. I'm not sure. I don't believe they did it maliciously, Kat. I'm going to suggest to you, and I'd love to call them out and say they did if I thought they did, but I don't think they did. I just think they're absent-minded. I don't think they realized. I think they forget the importance of this, and they forgot, and I think they've been more casual about it. You disagree with me?
No, I think you're right, and I agree with what Joni said and what Mike said. Memories fade, and it's a government it's a government entity. It's gridlock. It's this, it's that. And all of a sudden that memory has faded. That feeling that we had early on after 9/11, maybe, like you said, it's not like they're doing it maliciously, but it's almost like they've forgotten the impact of what this event did. I mean, these first responders should not want for anything.
That's right.
Just like our veterans, they should not want for anything. It should be a blank check. I totally agree with you 100%.
Yeah, we have short memories in this country. And I'm not just speaking about a crisis like this, Kat. Right. We just have short memories, period. And we forget. And I even mean that when it comes to the political class or really anything else that happens. Like there could be a disaster or something even more localized. It doesn't matter. But we tend to forget quickly and we move on. And I think that's, you know something, I think that's why the political greed take advantage of that, Kat. I think the power brokers, you know what I'm saying? They take advantage of that. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
What worries me now, Kat, Joni, is that I believe it's just a matter of time before this country faces another major disaster. I have a sense about this, and I don't know what it is. It's probably going to be something different. But I do believe we're going to be faced with another major problem that we're going to have to deal with as a nation ahead, because I think we've let our guard down in many, many ways. And a lot of the reason is I think we spend too much time fighting the political class in the Washington, and which really bleeds over, Joni, into all of our worlds. I mean, I hear people all the time say, well, you know, it doesn't really matter because, you know, it's just politics, or I don't really get involved in politics. But, you know, there's a saying, Joni, and it's this: you either get involved in politics or politics will get involved in you. Don't you get a sense, or is it just me, or do you get that sense? Let me ask you that.
I definitely think that politics affects all of us on levels we have no appreciation for. You know, you can look at crime rates, you can look at, you know, the number of hate crimes, for example, the increase in that. You can look at so many different statistics. And we, you know, a lot of times I think we don't realize that we take in this divisiveness. We internalize that, and it does affect how we see things, how we view things, what we believe. I mean, look at the, this is kind of an odd example, but look at the fashions, you know, historically. We could all look back at a time when we had on some crazy outfit that we look back on now and kind of go, how could I have ever worn this? But it was in fashion at the time, and somehow we started thinking that was cool, or that was okay, or whatever. And I think it's the same thing with views and politics. When people are divided and we're hearing that and seeing that on a daily basis, we do take that in.
Yeah. We internalize it all. And then when you, we internalize all of that. And then when you add to that the feverish pitch out there, hate that is playing out in all walks of life. And again, I think people are emulating. My guess on this is, and Joni, as a psychologist, you can answer this probably better than Kat and I even, but I'm sure Kat has a good answer as well. But let me ask you this. Yeah. Don't you think people are emulating? I mean, I know our kids, they can only be a byproduct of what they learn and what we teach them. But as a society, I think the political class, I believe that impact is rubbing off on society. And I'm seeing this this sense or this feeling out there where people are acting out and in the same way that the political leaders are, which is just a lot of hate, which accomplishes nothing because it's all this negative energy you're putting in yourself. And when you tie that on the fact that then you watch all of these movies and videos and that the kids are watching that are, as I call it, Joni, murder, mayhem, and rape. I mean, this has got to have an effect on society, which people are then going into the schools and they're shooting and they're doing other things, or they're road rage. Or I just think people are juiced up on all this hate right now.
I've never seen our country in my lifetime be as polarized as it is right now. And I absolutely think there's not only a trickle-down effect from the, you know, political leaders to the general public to our children, but it not only teaches us kind of how to see the world, but it also teaches us what's okay to do and how we can solve problems. You know, we can go into a school and shoot things up, or we can do these kind of things. So again, I just want to, I think that the impact is much wider than we even think it is.
Yeah. Kat, the societal impact of these things we're talking about here in the case of, you know, attitudes in general. I mean, you had to see in law enforcement the impact of people. I mean, I'm sure you met people on a daily basis that, you know, that were juiced up on this this energy, this negative karma, this energy. And I'm sure you experienced a lot of that in your law enforcement career. But what do you see right now with the temperature out there as a whole? Not so much left or right, but as a whole.
As a whole, I agree. I think people are, as a whole, they're too caught up in the BS rhetoric. They're too caught up in being politically correct. They're too caught up in looking for an optic moment. Look at me, look how enlightened I am, or wherever they fall. doesn't matter whether they're left or right. Everybody's too caught up in, I'm going to, you know, tippy toe around everything. And it's beyond ridiculous. It's like everybody needs to calm down and maybe we work as a centric nation. When we are more towards the center on both sides of the equation, we do function better as a nation. That's what we saw with like the aftermath of 9/11. And that's what we've lost with the forgotten memories of what that day meant to us, I think. That the attitude towards law enforcement, depending where you're at, right. You know, it's sometimes good and bad. You know, sometimes it's an automatic perception. You're bad because social media told me you're bad, mm-hmm. You know, or whatever they're following. You know, that's it's fine. A little distressing.
Now, that moment back then that you just described, Kat, that moment where we came together and that moment where we had this can-do attitude, I want to recapture that moment again as a nation. Any thoughts to how we could do that, Kat?
This is my thing for me. This is what makes my heart pound, is okay. The Constitution. I don't mean to sound cornball about it.
Right.
But people, if they would just slow down, read that document.
I know.
The people mm-hmm. have all the power. Those people that are elected to office are our representatives. It is incumbent upon us mm-hmm. as Americans to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd love to see people like be able to look at the flag and like maybe their heart pounds a little bit. Mm-hmm. Read that document and it gives me chills. I'm actually studying the Constitution right now.
Yeah, Kat, you're right on. You're right. Listen, what you say there, I so appreciate you saying that because it's the power of we the people, Kat. That's what we're speaking about here. Joni, I mean, you know, that again, that moment where we come together, what thoughts do you have to that end? How can we recapture that?
Well, I think one of the things that was unifying, obviously, is that we were all Americans at that point. We weren't black or white or green or yellow or, you know, from a certain religion or whatever. We were all just Americans. And I think that we have got to get back to that. And that, I think, can start individually with us reaching out and connecting with people who may not look the same that we do, who may not think the same that we do. One of the things that I've personally been trying to do is to kind of broaden my own exposure to different kinds of media and to get more involved with groups that I wouldn't normally get involved in. Mm-hmm. Because that, I think, is the real change. One of the things we know that when there's a tragedy, it's almost like it shakes us all up mm-hmm. and it provides this opportunity for cohesion. Mm-hmm. But to some extent, Malcolm, that's always going to be short-lived mm-hmm. because once that emergency is over or that crisis is over, then we all kind of go back to our regular lives. It's the slow work in the peacetime like now mm-hmm. with each of us deciding to do things differently and broaden our horizons that's going to make the long-term change.
Coming together as Americans and the power within that, I think, is just endless. The possibilities are endless. I see America as the most innovative society and the most unique people there ever was. Again, as I said to you before, you can't become a Frenchman, you can't become a German, you can't become a lot of things, but you can become an American. That's unique in itself, number one. What we do with that now and what becomes of that is up to us. We are so privileged and blessed to live in this, the greatest country there ever was. And I'm convinced of that every single day. Friends, I want to shout out again to Mike Bishop, the New York Fire Department retired lieutenant, also his dad, Homer Bishop. And it's important to remember the energy of people and what they bring to our world. And it never escapes me. It's time, people. It's time for all of us to get involved and get loud.